Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. You are listening once again to the What's Your Weird Story podcast, your weekly episodic podcast for the unusual, the weird, the left of center, and the bizarre and surprising, mysterious, multiple adjective podcast. I'm one of your hosts, the one who rambles a lot, Adam Beebe. With me, as always, is the other host, Barry Johnston, who makes us sound good. Hello, Barry.
Hello. What's going on?
Not a whole lot. I was trying to find myself out of a paper bag there.
Well, I guess this is as good a time as any to announce that I'm officially starting a cult.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. I've played in bands before, and I feel like that might be the only prerequisite to being a cult leader.
Yeah.
Well, or one of. I feel good about it. So that's kind of where my head's at. Not quite sure yet what my angle is going to be, but I have begun the foundation of hopefully what will become one of the largest UFO, Bigfoot, ghost cults.
Oh, fantastic. So. You do have, I think you've got a good leg up because, you know, you've been in bands and you've got friends in the music community, so people know you.
Yeah.
You've got a soothing speaking voice.
Oh,
it's very calming. Use that to your advantage. You've got a great personality.
Well,
and get along well with people.
Right.
And you're very positive with people, and you can you're very good about building people up.
I just need a white robe now.
There's that. Just a white robe and make people pay a lot of money for a camping trip and then, you know, break out some
inside
rubber
joke.
Gloves.
Inside
joke. This is an inside joke. It's an allusion to the, which may itself be an inside joke, but it's allusion to the fact that, you know, 30 Seconds to Mars has apparently turned their fan base into a cult. Or at least that's what they claim they call themselves. Right. So
it's great.
Who knows the actual validity of how serious it is, but...
Yeah, so anyway, I get on these kicks, you know, where, like, I get into, like, cult documentaries and start looking into David Koresh and, you know, Jim Jones, and that is a lane that is so fascinating to me, and
oh, yeah.
It's just one of those things where you think, man, people are so smart, but then they get hooked up into these odd belief systems, and then find themselves in a situation they can't get out of, so... Yeah, that was funny. We saw the article. I read an article about the whole thing with Jared Leto or whatever. So anyway, I thought I'd throw my hat in the ring if anybody wants to get behind it. Membership starting off $2,000, I'm guessing. Maybe it may go up from there. I don't know. But just to kind of get it going. You'll get a robe.
Get on the ground level.
Yeah, you'll get it. Yep, ground level. You'll get a robe for $2,000 and we'll kind of go from there.
Sounds good, man. I mean, that sounds like a really good, certainly a good retirement plan. Get some, you know, if you can hook some doctors in there, you can free medical care, you know.
True,
I mean,
yeah.
Get some, get you some land out there and build a compound. And,
oh, that's
you know,
easy. Yeah, that's
look,
easy.
Just, look, here's the trick. Just stay away from the guns because that's when the feds come in after you.
True, yeah.
And
they'll burn it down.
Yep, exactly. Yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So stay away from that, you know, and stay away from amphetamines, like Jim Jones.
Yep.
Don't go down that route.
Right.
And
that's got to be hard to do, though. You know.
Yeah. Well,
you got to at some point you got to buy into your own bullshit.
Oh, for sure, for sure. But also stay away from from, you know, children in a inappropriate manner.
Of course.
Because that's another downfall.
It seems
through a lot of the cult leaders.
Yeah, that they, absolutely. Yeah.
So, yes. Just, you know.
We'll keep, and, it, keep it at adults only, you know.
Right.
Adults, right. Adults only, consenting adults. Right. And at some point, we got to probably do a ton of drugs, but only so we can kill ourselves.
Sure.
But sure. That's later. We don't talk about that now.
Oh, yeah. That's much further down the line, you know.
Anyway, I don't know how to get out of that, but.
Well, today's episode has nothing to do with that. How about that?
yeah.
Quickly shifting gears. Today's episode is, it's unique. We haven't had anything like this really before. Our guest is my friend Jack. He used to frequent my comic book shop there in Goldsboro when it was open, and he's a pilot, and that he was stationed there, and he's really down to earth for a pilot, mm-hmm. which is, you know, that's kind of a joke, I guess, but super solid, awesome guy, and we always had great talks there at the shop. So he's got, when I was trying to bring him in, I asked, the initial question was, have you seen any UFOs? Because, mm-hmm. you know, pilots, you know, they see UFOs. And of course, I was also, this was kicked off in my brain by the Navy pilot mm-hmm. videos that we've seen and all of that. And he said, no, as a matter of fact, no. I was like, oh, he's like, but I do have this other story. Have this other thing.
And it's a good one.
It is good. So he did a little bit of research on it. He came fully armed. And, man, it's really cool. And it's like nothing we've had before. So
yeah, very cool. And he's a credible source. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And his sources are also credible as mm-hmm. well, because they are other pilots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we give pilots a distinction mm-hmm. of because they've got to be level-headed and mm-hmm. they've got to be observant and they've got to be paying attention to their surroundings because, you know, they are their pilots. So
right. Yeah, that adds a levity to the story.
Yeah. So I guess without further ado, Jack, thank you for joining us. What's your weird story?
Well, like you said, I've been a pilot in the Air Force for about 16 years now. And so I fly an old airplane. It was built in the 50s, KC-135. So a lot of history. And there is one plane. I mean, all the planes have a personality, but there's one plane that everybody knows. It's got a name. It's Spook 50. Tail number is 580050. And it's had a couple people die on it. Ooh. And I always thought it was just a legend, and I've flown the plane a bunch of times when I've been deployed. And because you just fly whatever plane's available, you just go out and whatever you're scheduled for. And
we should point out that the type of plane that you are a pilot of.
Yeah, so it's KC-135. It's a the old plane, the youngest ones. We're built in 63. The oldest ones that I've flown go back to 57.
Wow.
So like my grandfather was in the Air Force. He could have flown the plane.
Wow.
My dad could have flown the plane if he had joined. And then I did. I fly these things. And then they're supposed to be around long enough that my son could fly the plane. He's 9.
Wow.
So it was built during the Cold War. It's kind of the original job was to give gas in the air to bombers. Yeah. And the old B-52s, and it's like that plane, the 135 and the B-52 is like peanut butter and jelly. So, I mean, they were made for each other. Mm. And so back in the day, they used to sit alert, Strategic Air Command. And if the alarm went off, you'd jump in the plane, take off, you give your gas to a bomber, that bomber would go in the world. And you go find some place to land after that. If you can, and then Vietnam, and every conflict after, the 135 has been there in the air above the combat, giving gas to fighters, So they can stay in the air longer, because most planes can't stay in the air very long, especially the little ones. So we're there. They come up to us. We basically stick a boom in them, a big tube, and we pump gas into them. And then they go down and they do more fighting, or they go support the guys on the ground. They come back up a couple hours later, give them some more gas. They go away. They come back. Sometimes they, sometimes their bombs are gone. Sometimes they still have their bombs. So all my experience was in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got three people on the plane, so it's pretty small. You get to know each other, especially in a deployment.
Yeah.
They call it a hard crew. You're always together, and you stay together the whole time. So you basically live, work together, eat together for a couple of months. You get to know each other pretty well, and you begin to hate each other after a while. And then then once you realize you're going home in a couple of weeks, then you start to like each other again.
Sounds like being in command.
Yeah, it does.
Yes, basically. Yeah, I mean, it's you get to fly a lot of different planes, and like I said, this one, this specific tail number, Spook 50 it's written on the plane, it's earned it. I get a little bit of a creepy feeling on it, and it's been a long time since I've been on it, but with all the planes I've been on, that I can say it is a little bit creepy, and especially if you know what happened on it. And it's a little bit different than the other ones. It just doesn't have that same vibe, I guess. But if you're flying at night and you keep the lights off so you can keep your night vision, the boom operator sits in the front with the two pilots when we take off. And as we're going out to, you know, like a normal story, you're going out to Afghanistan, you take off. It's a couple hours to get there. Once you get there, you go to your area, wherever you're going to go, you set up your orbit, and then the fighters are going to come up. So the boom operator goes to the back. He leaves the lights off. He has about 120-foot walk to go through the cargo compartment. And it's dark, and it's creepy, and there's no lights. And you go to the back, and I've got some friends that have heard things on that plane. Nothing too creepy that maybe you could explain or not, but... the more I dug into it, the more I found some pretty, some fairly benign stuff. And I found some stuff that, like, it actually drove, according to one story, one of the boom operators went crazy after it and, had some issues after, this guy thought the plane was trying to kill him.
Whoa.
So,
wow.
Just kind of the light stuff. We can kind of start at the not so freaky stuff and then go back to the, okay. to that, minor things like crew chiefs on the plane have heard voices when there's no one there. They thought, some of the stories are they thought that usually there's two of them working on the plane at a time. So if one's up there, he thought, the other guy talked to him, and he looked back, and the guy's all the way in the back of the plane, or he's actually on the ground. And shadows. There's a story about a guy who's sitting. So there's a seat that sits behind where the pilot seat sit, and it faces towards the front of the airplane. So right behind him is a door, the cockpit door, and he goes back into the cargo compartment. Mm-hmm. He said as he was sitting there by himself on the plane filling out just maintenance forms, he said a hand reached out and touched him on the shoulder, and he turned, there's nothing there. And he jumped down, got off the plane. There's some stories about lights flickering on the plane when there's no power, which shouldn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I can think of some ways that there could be some explanations, but it shouldn't.
Yeah. And if it does,
you get some electrical gremlins. Some planes have these just electrical gremlins, and the weirdest thing I've seen is you turn the fan off. When we have the little fans, there's no air conditioning in a jet. It's a 1950s jet. It was the jet was designed before air conditioning. So there's no air conditioning on the jet. Mm. So on the ground, if it's super hot, you actually have to get an air conditioner on the ground that's on wheels, air cart, and you pump up cold air into the jet so that you can make it through the pre-flight without dying, because otherwise it gets pretty dang hot up there.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of fans. We always have the fans on. So if you turn the fan off, it kicked the autopilot off. Oh, too unrelated. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. It wasn't on Spook 50, but it was on a different jet, and it was the weirdest thing. And we did it over and over again because it entertained us. how does a fan connect to the autopilot? And who knows? Weird. There's been so many splices, so many updates to the jet.
Yeah.
Especially in the front. So, anyways, lights flickering out, power, shadows. Faces seen in the window,
like at altitude, or like
no, on the ground. But there was nobody on the ground,
right.
They were in the some more background on the jet. So you go through the cargo compartment is the cargo compartment. Just you put pallets and cargo. It's just big empty space. Mm. You can also seat people, and then at the very tail end of the jet, there's what we call the boom pod. So you have to kind of walk down into it. It sits kind of on the bottom of the jet, below the cargo, kind of the floor of the cargo part. So you go down into it, and there's basically a big pad that you lay down on. And so the boom operator lays down, and he's got controls, kind of like flight controls. Mm-hmm. And he flies the boom. The boom has little wings on him. So he sits back there. It's 1950 technology, so it's cables and pulleys. So he lowers the boom, and he flies it, and it's kind of like a tube inside of a tube, and it goes out and it connects to the other plane. So it's super dark back there, and this guy's by himself. So there's been stories of the grates. So there's these grates. So as you walk down into the boom pod, there's grates that can cover up the hole, basically kind of like a little hole in the back. So these big metal grates that cover it up. So if you're not using the pod, you can close the grates if someone doesn't accidentally fall into this hole. Mm-hmm. So there are stories of the grates falling down, and they're pretty, I've never seen that happen before. It's pretty secure, but just falling out without any kind of bump or anything, it just fell down. Mm. People have seen it open, which is a 40 pound grate.
Wow.
One of the crew chiefs at the front said someone opened it and then closed it. And that's why it's a 40 to 50 pound piece of metal. So,
wow.
These are all stories that I've found on the plane. I haven't experienced them myself, but there's the reason that all these stories kind of come out is because there is truth to what has happened on the plane. And I actually found a source document on it that shows it. And I've also heard these stories, but I've never seen a source document saying that mm-hmm. this happened on the jet. So in the Orlando Sentinel in November 22nd, 1988, a crew was flying from England back to the United States. And so they're flying pretty high in 35,000 feet, as the article says. And somewhere over the Atlantic, there's a window in the cockpit called the sextant window. So back in the day, the navigator used to have to use a sextant to shoot the stars and figure out where they were. Mm-hmm. So old school navigation.
Wow.
That window is gone today. They basically covered it up. But back when this window was still there, the window blew open.
Ooh.
And it was about 10 by 10 inches. So the suction, the boom operator was standing there. Boom operator got sucked out.
Oh, God.
But not all the way.
Oh, man.
He was partially out, and at that height, I mean, you don't have very long with rapid decompression like that, and they couldn't get him out. He was stuck.
Oh, God. That's... Oh, wow.
Dang.
So it doesn't horrible. Say it here, but the story I've heard is that he was stuck there until they landed, which was probably another hour away from landing, because they were out over the ocean.
Wow.
So, pretty brutal.
I've
heard that someone else died on the plane. I didn't find any documentation on that, but supposedly another crew member had a heart attack. So, but
man.
I'd always heard that two people had died on the plane, but I know I've got proof that one person has.
Wow.
So, so yeah, the voices and the shadows are, and I have friends that have told me directly that, that in the past, and but you know, myself, I've flown the plane several times. You get a little bit of that creepy vibe because you know the story, but I hadn't seen anything, but I wouldn't go back there in the dark.
Yeah, no kidding.
So,
so is that kind of talked about? You know, I mean, is that a well-known thing, or do you kind of have to hunt for that kind of information with people?
The story. So I'd always heard back in I think the first time I flew the plane was probably 2005.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and then the plane was stationed at Fairchild Air Force Base. So every time I was never stationed there, but I would fly Fairchild's planes when I was deployed because they had planes there too. And so I flew it. You would just fly every plane eventually,
right?
Because you would fly almost every day. You fly maybe like 5 days out of the week. So you would be your turn eventually.
Mm-hmm.
You would get it.
Yeah.
And so you would get to learn the jets, and you would know which jet did what, and everybody knew about this one. And it's on the nose of the airplane, and okay. Inside the plane it says Spook 50. Like it's been supposedly haunted for 20 years.
Wow.
At least 20 years.
Yeah, he sent me some pictures, so we'll put those up on the on the Instagram and social media.
Yeah, people to see. You can if you just Google Spook 50, it pops up, and it's been the Air Force Times has mentioned it. The Fairchild Air Force Base website has a small blurb on it. It talks about Spook 50. I've heard stories from coworkers, other crew members that I've flown with. And I actually was in, when I was actually at Fairchild doing a class, there was, and I always thought it was just a myth. It was just some air crew story just to, you know, scare young lieutenants. Cause you got to mess with co-pilots.
Of course.
I'm in the hallway and I look at this picture on the wall and it's got a picture of Spook 50 on there, and below it, it has a blurb that talks about the story about how, the boom operator was killed, from the decompression. And I was like, wow, there's actually proof that this happened. And it's on the wall at Fairchild.
Wow.
So,
wow.
It's just this, everybody knows about it. And, so we're, I wouldn't say a small community, but, you tend to know a good portion of the people, and you tell stories about these things. You're drinking beer, especially when you're deployed.
Sure.
You got nothing else to do.
Oh yeah.
You know, Jim Tam laundry and tell stories.
Right. Wow, man. That's crazy.
So I do have this one story I got. Actually, it was actually found it on Reddit, and it's from an aircraft commander or one of the pilots wrote the story, and he's talking about his boom operator and how his boom operator really had issues, like because of this experience on one deployment and flying this plane at least three times. Over the three times, this boom operator had an experience that freaked him out and visibly shook the guy. And eventually the guy got to the point where he was sent home because he was in no condition to fly. And the guy kind of tells a story how that, you know, jets have different personalities, and you just kind of know, and which this one, you know, is true. And I wouldn't say, like, if someone has something like this, I wouldn't attribute it to stress, because what we do is just, it's more monotonous than anything. We don't get shot at. I've never been shot at, and I know a couple friends who have, but it's been It's very rare for a tanker to be shot at. We generally operate out of fairly safe locations, and then we go and fly above the dangerous areas. So it's really just, you get tired. It's more fatigue of just flying every day and long sorties and stuff like that. So this guy, they were flying, and I think the first thing that happened to this guy was he was doing a pre-flight. So they're on the ground. And so the boom operator, the pilots are in the front in the cockpit doing their pre-flight. And so the boom operator goes to the back and basically just applies hydraulic pressure to the back. There's a window that you open up so you can see out better. So normally when you're flying, it's closed. And then when you want to do AR, you open it up so you can see what you're doing. And so he's back there making sure everything's working. And the pilot said he heard a loud yelp. And the boom operator started running up to the front, and he said that he saw a face in the window, and there was no, and this is 10 feet off the ground. So he said there was no way it was the crew chief, because the crew chief usually stands behind the jet, a little further behind the jet, so it wouldn't have been him. So he says he saw something, and so they go and fly. He calms down, get through the pre-flight. They go out to Afghanistan. They're orbiting, and they get their first receiver. And he says just as they finished the first plane that they were refueling, something grabbed his foot and shook it. And he's alone back there, and the pilots are up front. And so he yelled through the headset. He's like, something just grabbed my foot. And at that point, he starts feeling like the jet is after him.
Oh, damn.
So he's a little freaked out. So that was it for that flight. They get back. They fly more sorties. And then a few days later, they get Spook 50 again. And so they... nothing with the pre-flight, nothing with the flight. They get done, and they're about to come home. They're cleared to return home, and so what happened is there's something called St. Elmo's fire.
Mm-hmm.
You guys ever heard of it?
Yeah.
So as you're flying, and it only happens in clouds. So as you're flying through clouds, there's a lot of static electricity. It starts building on the nose of the plane and kind of the tips of the plane. You know that plasma ball, you touch his kids, and you get the little string of plasma. It looks like that. Okay. So it's a little freaky. It's normal. So as they're climbing out, they said they got the worst St. Elmo's fire they've ever seen. Like, it was bright as day, just real quick. And so the boom operator was staying in the back as they were climbing out, and he said... like, it just blew up bright blue. They said there were no clouds, which is weird because it should only happen in clouds.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So unless they flew some clouds that they didn't see, which at night you might be able to do. They said it lasted a second, and then it was over.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that was freaky for him. Yeah. And then so they're coming home. Everything's fine after that. As they're coming home, when they go to drop the gear, so it's all cables and pulleys, right? And some hydraulics. The nose gear didn't quite lock, so it's just kind of hanging out there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not like a real abnormal thing. It happens every once in a while. It hasn't happened. I've had variations of that, but you can fix it. So they have to manually lock it in place, and then. But the worst thing is the boom operator has to crawl down what we call the hell hole,
mm-hmm.
which is down kind of in the nose of the plane, and he has to put a pin in the gear to lock it.
Mm. Yeah.
So when he's down there, he's off of headset. You can't hear him. Oh, you can't talk to him. And it's loud down there. So he goes down there, and I think I should probably read the quote on it. Let's see. He disappears down there. He comes back up later, and he's like, on the verge of tears. He's freaking out. They don't know what happened down there. They said everything was normal. He said that the entire compartment was resonating. He could feel vibrations in his body. He thought the floor was going to crack open, and then Spook was going to spit him out into the sky. So he thought the plane was trying to kill him.
Wow.
So, and the pilots up front are like, what, dude? What's going on? Whoa. So they landed, and he said, I'm not flying on this plane anymore. They get, the director of ops was like, the next time they get the jet, they specifically ask for, do not fly us on this jet anymore. But eventually they get scheduled right. for it. And they right. said, we're not flying on, they said, we, the boom does not want to fly on this jet. And they just, you know, do your job, go do it. That's what you're scheduled for. Fly the right. jet. It's a jet. So they go out and, they're like, okay, we'll do it. The boom operator's like, we'll get it done. And this is the last time the guy flew the plane. And this is where it's kind of crazy. So they're on the ground. There's normally a ground cart that provides power to the plane while you're doing your pre-flight. Mm-hmm. So basically a little generator on the ground that you plug into the plane. And it wasn't working. They couldn't get it to connect. And that's one of the kind of common things with this jet is it has issues with electricity plugging in and stuff. So this is one of those days where it wouldn't work. And so the alternative is something called an APU. Every jet has an APU, the auxiliary power unit. It's mm-hmm. basically a little tiny jet engine that sits in the back, and its job is to provide electricity and then provide lead air, air to start the engine. Because to start a jet engine, you have to motor it. You have to get it moving. Mm-hmm, so it right. takes air to move it. So that's what this little APU does. So they're starting an APU, and so they're using APU for the to provide power to the jet while they're doing the pre-flight. And at some point, there's an issue with the boom, and he needs to go outside and look at it. So the boom operator goes down, starts walking to the back. And the APU is on the side of the jet at the very back on the kind of the left side of the tail. And as he's walking back there, a fuel line ruptures in the APU and it starts shooting fuel out about, he says 40 feet. And then it lights on fire because it hits the exhaust. So this jet is off the side of the jet in the back. It's throwing fuel and fire about 40 feet outside. And this guy is directly under it when this happens.
Oh my God, dude.
So it could have killed him if he had ran the wrong direction, but he ran under the jet to the other side. But after that, like, he was so freaked out, he couldn't fly anymore for that deployment. They sent him home.
Oh, man.
So he said, and the pilot says that he tried to talk to him, like calm him down. It's like, dude, it's just a freak accident. The old jet, stuff happens. You're okay. But the boom operator says to him that, quote from the story is that he didn't know what it was like to be hunted by something.
Ooh.
I mean, these guys thought that the jet was trying to kill him.
Wow.
So end of the story is, according to the account, is that, you know, a couple years go by, this guy tries to, this pilot tries to call him, try to find out what happened to him. He finds out that he had trouble with alcohol. He ended up going to jail for domestic violence and, sounds like his life didn't go too well after that, but
it's like Christine, but with
that is insane. Yeah, and most of the things that I've ever heard, especially from people I know, are really, really like minor, like just shadows and you know, seeing someone in the back of the plane when there isn't anybody there, and you know, hearing stuff. And but this like, I'd never heard anything like this, and I talked to Adam last week, and he's like, hey, has anything happened to you? And I was like, well, there's this legend of this plane that I've flown, And I was kind of talking about, you know, that I'd known that someone had died on it, maybe a second person had died on it, and that it's just known in the community,
right,
that's the haunted airplane. And then I found this story that, wow. And you talk about pilots tend to be pretty, they're credible sources, I would say, yeah, for the most part.
Sure.
We're well-trained, good education. You have a lot of responsibility for a piece of machinery that's very expensive, and also, you know, people's lives.
Right.
Yeah.
So you gotta be, you know, responsible. Right. And then as a crew, especially as a hard crew on deployment, you get to know somebody.
Yeah.
So even if you don't believe, like, you're like, I have no idea what's happening in the back. Like, this guy's one of your, he's part of your family now, you know, right. And you gotta go, what is going on with this? So that's a crazy story.
It is. It is.
You know, from the tank pilots that I've met, you included, and our example, a very good example of it, are all the most down to earth and level headed of the pilots that I've, you know, that I've met and experienced.
Well, we're not fighter pilots. We had to be, we're the redheaded stepchildren, so you have to be humble.
Yeah. Yeah. The fighter pilots are a whole other story, man. They're
a bunch of nerds.
Yeah.
They hang out in vaults and study all day, so I'm not saying their planes aren't cool.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, so yeah, that's one of those things. When I initially approached Jack, it was to see if he'd, you know, seen any UFOs or any Foo Fighters or anything like that, you know. And I hadn't even considered that he was flying haunted jets.
Yeah, I've kind of seen like some of the threads that talk about haunted jets, like some of the stories I found. There's other haunted jets out there, military jets, and mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, there's five airplanes in the Air Force fleet that are over 50 years old. So, I mean, there's a lot of combat that's been seen in them.
Right.
You know, tankers you don't really think of. Can't think of anyone that's been shot. None of them have been shot down. They have mm-hmm. a very good safety record. There's some issues, but... it's an old jet. It's been around a long time. It's old, reliable, you know?
Yeah.
So it's seen a lot of things. And have you ever been on an old battleship tour or like the Yorktown or the old carrier? You know that smell?
Yeah.
That old smell? That's what my plane smells like. It smells like musk and history.
Right.
Sweaty men and machines.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the worst thing I have to do in the summer is, you know, I watch guys do their pre-flight as an instructor, and then they get out of the seat and they've been sweating for at least 45 to minutes to an hour.
Right.
And then I get into a soaked, sweaty seat that's not my sweat.
Oh, man.
And it is the grossest thing. And that sweat just builds over years and years. And, a lot of history.
Wow.
Call it that.
Well, you know, we've talked about on the show how some people seem to be more prone to experiencing, like, the ghost side of the supernatural kind of stuff, and some people just aren't, and like me, I'm not, you know, I moved into an apartment that was haunted that I didn't realize that, but the previous tenant who I knew the reason she left was because it was haunted, and we've had her on the show early on. Maybe it's just that maybe you just don't have that.
I don't think I do. I've been to a lot of when we lived in North Carolina, you know, the Civil War sites mm-hmm. that are out there, and I took my poor wife. I spent 7 days taking her to like 14 different battlefields, because that was the awesome thing about North Carolina is like I'm 6 hours from Gettysburg right. and 20, 30 other battlefields, which I'd never been before. And I was like, wow, all this stuff I can go see. So I love, I drug her to all these battlefields, and we stayed at this bed and breakfast, at Gettysburg, and it was a farmhouse. And, we were there for a couple of days. We went to a haunted tour, and I was talking to the lady, and she asked, the lady who's giving the tour, and she asked where I was staying, and I was saying, this is whatever this bed breakfast is. She goes, oh, that was a field hospital, and that's one of the most haunted bed and breakfasts ever.
Yeah.
Because, you know, think of all the people that lost their arms and legs and their lives.
No kidding.
And I had the best night's sleep there that I had had. I never had issues. I went to some, like, we went on tour, and I went and sat by myself in some of these haunted areas in the dark and just sat there, and I'm like, I feel completely fine right now. So I don't think it doesn't come to me, and I'm fairly skeptical. So if I see something and I'm like, I can explain it, then
yeah,
there's probably an explanation. So
yeah.
Have I seen weird things in the sky? I've seen lights that are probably just other things, but you see enough of them, you know what you're seeing. So
right.
And so a lot of times in the dark, you just don't know what is blocking stuff too. So I remember being over Dubai, and I wouldn't say it's like a UFO story, but I saw some weird orange lights, and I have no idea what was over. There's nothing over there. It's just mountains and desert and stuff. So I don't know what it was. Could have been flares or something. They like to do crazy stuff out there. So it looked kind of like flares, but didn't look like flares too. So I don't, and maybe there was something that was being blocked by the mountains over in, like, in and out. So that's the only kind of weird thing I've seen. Most of what I've seen, just lots of meteorites.
Mm.
I've seen some pretty cool meteors.
Oh, I bet, man.
Shooting stars.
Yeah, dude, especially at that height,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I remember one time, we were just leaving Spain, going oceanic back to the U.S., and I looked over and I see the shooting star come through the clouds and then explode below me.
Whoa.
And just boom. And I was like, wow, that's got to be an unlucky day if that thing would come down.
No,
like, because it was probably like 20 miles, 30 miles from us, 40 miles. Wow. I don't know. Like, it's hard to tell the distance and size.
Right.
Tonight. So, yeah, it's.
That's cool. Well, I mean, you know, scary, but cool.
Maybe ish.
Yeah. No kidding. Wow.
That would be just a sight to behold. I mean, really, like, a shooting star that close. Wow.
That's the only time I've seen one actually come through my altitude. Usually they're really high, you know, super high.
Yeah.
But this one came through. It was cool to see it go through the clouds and then come out underneath. But they're pretty, it's, shooting stars are so pretty common, especially depends on the, if there's a shower going on, you see them constantly.
Yeah.
Especially if you're flying in West Texas where there's no ground lights, or even in Afghanistan or Iraq or out there, there's barely any lights at all. Right. It's pretty dark. So,
right. Wow.
It's hard to imagine. Most people don't live in a place that's that dark
anymore. Right.
So it's hard to imagine that darkness, in just stars.
Yeah, but, sure. Cool. That's cool. Yeah,
I don't know. I think that you saw UFOs. I think that, or that you're just saying that they're flares, man. I think you're just playing the government line that they were just flares.
They do pay my paycheck, so I think part of the man, part of the machine. Most things I hear when you work in the government and then you hear all these, like, the Area 51 stuff, it's like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Not that I know what's going on there, but it's not as exciting as you think it is.
Right.
It's not going to be aliens, I tell you that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been talking about the storm the Area 51 idea and stuff. It's like, oh my God, morons. Bunch of morons.
Bad, bad, bad idea.
I've done a lot of flying. It's so it's restricted area 4808 is the airspace term for it. And it's you go out to Nellis and you do like Red Flag, or there's this massive area, and it's a really cool place because it's there's always air wars going up there. So you have the good guys, blue guys, and the red guys. They're fighting each other out there. That's what they do out there. They practice fighting each other.
And so
I've been out there tons of times, and you fly around it, and you don't go in that area. You don't clip it. You don't touch the border, or you go home.
Oh, wow. They're serious. So,
yeah. You don't, even if you have an emergency, you don't land there.
Wow.
So if I lost every single engine, I'm not allowed to land there.
Wow.
So,
yeah, I think that if there ever was, alien tech or alien bodies there, that it's been taken to some other place, you know, by now, because I mean, you wouldn't keep a super secret thing in a place that has been called, been exposed to have all this, you know. It just doesn't make sense. You'd be like, oh, well, our secrets are here. Everybody knows this, where our secrets are. You know, well, let's just keep them here. You wouldn't do that. That's even if, you know.
Yeah.
And of course,
they didn't even acknowledge what it was called that existed until like 2013.
Yeah,
it was like real late.
Yeah, because of a court case, because of a some former employees that were there sued to find out what they had been exposed to that gave them all these terrible diseases, and they lost. The government said, we don't have to tell you, or the judge's rule saying that the government does not have to tell them what they were exposed to that ultimately caused their deaths.
Wow.
You know, but because they worked there at that, the Area 51, or what is, you know, called, referred to as that. And that's when, you know, they were denying, the representatives for the government were denying that it existed. And they're like, okay, well, yeah. You know, but of course, they didn't say anything about beyond the fact that it is a physical thing there. That is what it is. And that is in the place where people call Area 51 or whatever. Mm. So
crazy.
Yeah.
I'll just be happy when we get to Mars.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding.
If I could do.
You going to volunteer for the trip, man?
See, it's hard once you have kids. I would totally do it.
You thought for a second, though. You did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, as a kid, I had like three things that I wanted to do. I wanted to dig up dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. Not even a kid, like in high school.
Yeah.
Fly airplanes and be an astronaut. So I got one of them.
Yeah.
I applied to be an astronaut. I met the requirements. It doesn't take much, but you can apply, but you're not going to get it unless you have multiple doctorates and. In my case, what I should have done 10 years ago was apply for test pilot school. But the last program with the Ares program was canceled. And then now I was like, okay, now there's a space race. So I'm like, oh man, if I had known there was going to be a space race in the future, I would have done it and be like, I would have been ready for it.
Right.
But, right. So
go sign up for
space. So kids out there, if you want to be an astronaut, be a pilot, be a test pilot. Going there for
it.
Or not, you know.
I think all kids are fascinated with that.
Yeah, all my buddies left the Air Force and now flying commercial. So,
yeah,
they're making big bucks.
Yeah, they're happy.
So, and here I am, living in Western Oklahoma.
Part near paradise down there.
Yeah. It's close to Texas, so. We got mountains.
Yeah, yeah. That's a rare thing there in Oklahoma, for sure.
They're called mountains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hills. We all agree that. Yeah, but that.
I call them retired mountains. They used to be mountains. And now they're time has gotten to them.
Yes. Yes.
So
cool.
Yeah, it's. I've enjoyed my time. So flying's better than working is what I say.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. For sure. Well, keep doing what you're doing, man. Keep us safe and keep our guys fueled up.
Well, you're not doing that anymore. You're just teaching, right?
Yeah, I mean, we're still training.
Right, so you're training, I guess. Yeah. So, yeah, you are. Technically, I guess you are still doing that. So.
I'm still doing the thing. The same thing. And we're just doing it for training instead of for real. Okay. But I do get out of the house and I go do exercises like at Red Flag or on occasion. So
cool deal.
Yeah, I spent a month in Hawaii last year working.
Terrible. That's terrible.
Right. So we were giving gas to the Navy guys out of Hickam in Honolulu. So that was a good time.
That's cool.
But it had to be done.
Yeah. Right. Somebody had to do it.
I'm glad. Well, you know, I'm thankful for your suffering, you know.
I have suffered. I've been to some terrible places.
Oh, I'm sure.
I've been to some good places, too. The best deployment I've ever had was at this little island called Curacao.
Oh, yeah. That's where the blue liqueur is from.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what they're known for. Huh. I sampled it, you know. Right next, it's next to Aruba and Bonaire, and I spent a month there, and it was amazing.
That's awesome.
I mean, I mean, my entire career has been deployed to deserts in the Middle East, but I got one to a good place.
They owed you one. At least.
Yeah. I just got that one. That was it. Yeah,
right.
No more after that. Everybody gets to take a turn.
Right. You're still talking about it, so I guess it worked.
Yeah.
And you survived Spook 50, so.
I did. Yes. I've had other planes try to. It's more the people on the plane trying to get me, but. I've been lucky. Like, I don't. I know a lot of guys that and ladies pilot wise that they just attract, like, I don't know if they have gremlins with them that tear apart the jet when they're flying, or I have some friends that just have consistent issues flying, and I don't I've declared maybe three emergencies my entire career, 4,000 something hours flying, and I've only had to declare, and all of them were not super big issues. They were kind of weird issues. But,
wow.
I've never shut down an engine. That's pretty common for everybody. Old engines, something's going to go wrong with them eventually. So luckily you have three more engines if you lose one. So,
you know that old saying about sausage, you don't want to watch how it's made. You know, I think I feel that same way about flying. Like, I don't want to know all the troubles that are going on in the cockpit.
Right.
Give me another Jack and seven. And it's all good. Get me down safe. I watched some footage of that. I think it's the like the most dangerous flight or landing situation, like in Scotland or something. The airport in Scotland that's like just gets... The winds get crazy, and they have to go in with, like, their belly up and then, you know, cockeyed and then catch it just right to lay it down on the... It just looks awful. I can't even imagine the amount of stress that guys must go through to land planes there. Yikes.
Yeah, it's called crabbing.
Crabbing the wind. That's it. Crabbing, yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah, so you kind of like a boat... In the stream,
right?
You have to go sideways to go straight.
Have you ever seen that, Adam? Have you ever seen that footage of those planes?
I've seen something like that, but I don't know if it's as extreme as what you're talking about.
And these are passenger planes, man. 747s that they're landing like that.
Some planes can land safely in a crab. It just depends. Like some, the KC-135 is in the 90s. They took the old engines off and they added these big old turbofan engines. Mm-hmm. And they're so big that they hang real low to the ground. So you have to, you can't have a very strong crosswind.
Right.
We call them pod scrapes when you bang the engine on the ground. So they don't happen very often, but usually it's because of crabbing. You have to take the crab out in our jet. You have to land with the wing straight or the nose straight down the runway.
Gotcha.
So it only takes like 4 degrees of bank when you're on the ground to
hit one.
Between 4 and 8, depending on if you're touching down or not. But and usually you don't even know it. From what I've heard, you don't know until the engine fails and some lights come on above you.
Right.
That something's gone wrong. So. yeah.
I'll continue.
I'm having some flashbacks and some landings from last week. That I flew this week.
Oh man, stay safe, man. Stay safe. Dude.
Cool. All right, man. It was good. It was good catching up with you and hearing these, man. These are great stories, man. That Spook 50 that's wild.
Yeah,
I can't even imagine the horror show of the guy getting sucked out halfway through the that hole, that Sextant window. Oh man.
Yeah.
And I mean, the only thing you can hope is that he passed out real quick.
Yeah,
I would imagine. I would imagine.
Yeah. So.
I mean, it's
that's a bad way.
Yeah, to I don't. I've had some windows crack on me, and that's freaky enough where I start tightening down the seatbelt, and you're looking out a windscreen, and there's all these little spider cracks going through the windscreen, and then they start multiplying, and they start.
I mean, when something like that happens and there's that amount of pressure being sucked out, what do you do with your limbs? Like, how do you keep your body in check? Is there a way to do that, or do you just sort of hang on for dear life?
I mean, if you're not, I can only imagine the reason that the guy was pulled out was because he was standing right under it, and that's usually where the boom operator is, where that Sextant window used to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's right in the middle, behind where the pilots sit.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's actually right next to the nav. What used to be, or I guess we still call it the nav position navigator. We have GPSs and really good navigation systems now, so we don't need navigators.
Right.
So. Yeah, that window. And you think about the stress on the plane. It's like it's kind of like a balloon. You know, it inflates and then you get on the ground and the pressure sticking out of it, and then you get back down. The pressure comes back down and goes out and in and out.
Right.
And they're old.
Right.
So
yeah. Right.
Wow. Hopefully you get. Hopefully it's already there and you have issues. If you have issues pressurizing, but you should be strapped in. If you're sitting down, you're strapped in. And if something happens like that, you got to get your oxygen on real quick and then descend so you can get back to a normal atmosphere so your body doesn't start to have decompression issues.
Right. Wow.
Because there's a lot of nasty things that happen with decompression.
Yeah.
So.
That's awesome. Great stories.
Cool. Well, yeah, thank you for sharing, man. Thank you for your service, I should say. We appreciate that. As complete civilians who never made any kind of branch of the military, we appreciate your service. All right, well... we wish you, I wish you come back when you see some UFOs for real and tell us about those. Because they're out there. So, technically, I mean, you know, for sure, unidentified flying objects, you know, not knowing what it is, that exists, because, you know, that could be a flare or anything, but we hope you see the real deal. So,
yeah. If I saw something truly insane, or it's like, that's not normal, I'll let you know.
Cool.
All right. Sounds good, man.
I do fly over Marfa. Have you ever heard the Marfa lights?
Mm-hmm.
I fly over Marfa almost every day.
So, wow.
But I haven't seen them yet. I'm waiting for it. Yeah. I'm waiting for the Marfa lights.
Cool.
Sunday, October, Saturday, October 19th, Enid, Oklahoma, at the Enid Brewing Place. Barry, what's it called?
Enid Brewing Company on the corner of Independence and Maine.
That's right. Hopefully we got your attention just now. That's right. Saturday, October 19th. You've heard us talk about it. We're talking about it again. Our very first live event, What's Your Beer Story, where we're going to be featuring your three hosts, co-hosts, telling and sharing true life stories of the beer kind, the had too much to drink kind, the hold my beer, etc. kind. And we are inviting you to be there to share your stories as well. You can try out the variety of beers available and made exclusively by the Enid Brewing Company, including co-host Barry Johnson, who is one of the brewmasters there. And also hear some funny stories and have a good time and just catch up with us. It'll be a fun time. We're going to do stuff. It'll be hilarious. It's going to be fun. We'd love to see you. Join us Saturday. October 19th, 2019, Enid, Oklahoma.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe, WHATS hyphen YEO. /weird-story, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, it's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, What's Your Weird Story, currently there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon. So just keep your eyes out for that, and if you decide to get one of their shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors.
Wow, great story. Mm-hmm. I always think about it when it comes to ships, the hauntings and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But man, he just raised a whole other avenue of a haunting that you wouldn't necessarily think about, but it makes sense. It makes sense because, you know, these aircrafts have been involved in, especially what he's flying, which is such an old aircraft. They've been involved in some very, very intense encounters and people going through very intense emotions while operating the craft. And, you know, just the amount of years that they've seen, it's just very, very interesting.
That, I mean, it's an amazing history for a machine. And it makes sense, you know, like you said, it makes sense that there would be something attached to it, you know, whether it's a consciousness of the machine itself or some other thing, it, you know, because like the one guy who thought it was out to kill him, you know, or maybe it was the guy who got sucked through that porthole window thing.
Right.
That, God, that would be just so, man, that's just so terrible. I mean, I can't even think of I had all those great descriptions at the beginning of the show, but I can't think of one that really is suiting for that kind of grisly death.
And like you were talking about before too, you know, these guys are mentally tough people. They are specifically picked to do a job based upon their mental awareness and the ability to push through things that a normal person, an average person, may not be able to do. So the fact that he was so swept up with that and it and it got to him, it raises a lot of questions. And the fact that everyone knows that this aircraft has something extra going on is pretty fascinating.
Yeah, and then the
you know, where he talked about, you know, he was going to the battlegrounds. I mean, obviously, battlegrounds are, especially in the United States, there's so many things associated with Civil War hauntings and Civil War battlegrounds being so haunted, and all that area around there being so haunted, and just, you know, just being drawn towards that. But I don't know. I've often, I don't know. Would you go, would you camp out at a supposedly haunted battlefield? Would you stay the night?
That scares me less than a house. I don't know why. Maybe because it's not a structure necessarily, but I don't know. That's a good question. I normally wouldn't seek something out like that.
Yeah, me neither.
My wife thinks that she's got it together enough to do that, but I always call bullshit on that. I don't know. Something about an area, a place that's seen so much tragedy that I'm okay in the daytime going and checking it out. But man, as soon as the sun goes down, I don't know if I'd want to be around.
Yeah. What if, you know, a whole mass group of ghosts started coming towards you?
Lord, I would freak out. Freak out.
Yeah. Well, that leads me into to next week's podcast stories, man. We've got Rosa, who was alluded to in Emily's Cuckoo Banana Pants episode, who was our neighbor in the same apartment, but at different times. So,
yeah,
Rosa's got some stories, man. It's going to be a great episode. There's just such a... She's had a life full of them, so you guys will definitely want to tune in next week.
Yeah, you're never going to hear stories like this. One in particular that is just it's flabbergasting.
Yeah, yeah, it's good, it's great. We don't want to give away too much, but you can hear it in 7 days or less if you get late on to download. So, so anyway, thanks for listening once again. We are getting so close to the live event show that is going to be on the 19th. Yeah. That's barely over a week away from this.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. If you guys are able to make it, come out to Ena Brewing Company, and it's on the corner of Main Street and Independence, downtown Enid. We have a lot of great beers on tap. We'll have a food truck. We'll be there also. You're more than welcome to bring food from anywhere else in to the brewery and bring your family. It's a family friendly environment. And yeah, man, we're looking forward to it. We're going to have fun. It's going to be fun. We're going to tell some stories. We're going to have some laughs and enjoy some good food and beverage.
Yeah. And if you want to come in and tell one of your funny stories that happened when perhaps you had too much to drink or definitely did or something like that, or one of your friends and you were party to it. Yeah, man, let us know. We'll put you on the list for sure. We've got a short list right now, but we are, you know, we're building up, and hopefully by the time this goes out, we'll have an even longer list. So, but join up, be part of it. It's going to be fun, and we're going to be there, so we know that we're going to have a good time. So that's right. We want you to have a good time and join us and have fun too. So cool deal. All right, well, let's go ahead and let's get rolling. We got stuff to plan out for that. So thanks again for listening, everybody. We want to hear your stories in the very near future, so get a hold of us for that. And until then, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.